In 1945, Laurence Olivier won a special Academy Award for producing, directing, and starring in Shakespeare's Henry V. Now there's a new film version of the play, adapted and directed by Kenneth Branagh, who also stars as the young king. Branagh is a 28-year-old British actor. He's a former member of the Royal Shakespeare Company, where 5 years ago he became their youngest member ever to star in Henry V. Co-starring in his new film are Paul Scofield, Derek Jacobi, Ian Holm, and Robbie Coltrane. The story of Henry V begins when the Archbishop of Canterbury convinces the king he has a legal claim to the French throne. The play climaxes as the king leads his bedraggled troops in an invasion of France. The mood of Branagh's Henry V is darker than that of Olivier's. I asked him to compare the two versions.
It's a darker film, yeah. I mean, literally it's darker. And the contradictions in the central character give it that sort of flavour. In the Olivier film, there was a tremendously glamorous, resolute, Camelotian hero, a knight in shining armour, someone on whom everyone could depend. If you read the play, the language and the situations are such that the character of Henry V is much more ambiguous. He's a frightened man in some ways. He's a very passionate man, and yet he's in a public position where he can't really reveal that. And yet we're able to put back a couple of scenes. There's a scene where he finds out that one of his best friends has betrayed him, Scroope, where he displays an enormous passion and also a very genuine human sense of the betrayal. Now, anybody can clue into that, and he does it with such kind of venom, and he makes the whole scene very public. The king makes it very public. It's a strange thing to do, and I think it indicates someone who is less in control, you know, than the Olivier version, and that in itself has lots of effects on other characters.
I think there's a lot of problems involved with bringing Shakespeare to the screen, but I think one of the real advantages is that you don't have to speak really loudly in front of, you know, to a large audience. You could speak in a very naturalistic voice, and I think that's something you really make the most of. In the movie.
We try to do it very much. Again, the thing that puts people off is when you've suddenly got declamatory acting and people doing things like they're from plays, and, you know, suddenly you've got two armies that sounds like they come from Pluto or something. you know, we want to just... I mean, I can't bear that. Just it sends me to sleep. Because Shakespeare done badly is just about the worst thing in the world.
Now, the contradiction, though, is that film is a more naturalistic setting in a way than stage, because you can bring it on location. And although you could speak Shakespeare in a naturalistic voice, it's not naturalistic writing. Mm. So you have this kind of contradiction as soon as you bring Shakespeare to the screen and take it out of the stage setting.
Mm. It's a question of balance, you know. It is heightened speech. It is dramatic poetry. But if one can sort of vaguely say it in a way that sounds like he really is on a real cart talking to real people, and then you've got that extra dimension of heightened poetry, intensity of feeling, I think it really gives you that extra special thrill, and it's what makes it, in a sense, worth doing, is because it can somehow reach somewhere other. You can just get that extra bit of juice, and it can move you in a way that a piece of music can move you. You know, it can get to the pit of your tummy quicker and somehow remain there, be more memorable. That was the great challenge for me, was to capture that extra special dimension without suddenly it becoming completely unbelievable.
Something else not naturalistic about Shakespeare: people don't speak to themselves in long soliloquies.
Yeah.
And that's something that's going to be especially self-conscious looking on screen, because, again, it's a more naturalistic medium. Tell us how you wanted to deal with that. And you're the one doing the soliloquies as Henry V.
Yeah, well, there are only a couple of moments, but one spectacularly long soliloquy, really, which does hold its own, because by that stage of the movie, really most of this reflective stuff that you're talking about, most of, if you like, the kind of Hamlet that's in Henry, happens a little later on in the movie when we've had a great deal of action and direct speech between characters. One of the things people liked was that Henry's soliloquies, particularly the Upon the King soliloquy, which is him basically trying to resolve with himself the fact that he's going to be isolated forever. I'm never going to have friends. No one's ever going to understand what it's like to have this kind of responsibility. I'm always going to be alone in the middle of the night, being a bit miserable. Well, we all, you know, at various times are alone in the middle of the night with our thoughts. He speaks them out loud, and it's a very, I think, easy to understand argument. And people, And this is what's unique about Shakespeare. I've said to me, it was really exciting because I understood it and I enjoyed understanding it. What, you know, you might think of as a complex argument, but which, spoken by a real person in a real situation, just came out. It kind of just, in the context of the play, that just justifies itself.
Upon the king, let us our lives, our souls, our debts, our careful wives, our children, and our sins lay on the king. We must bear all. Oh, hard condition. Twin born with greatness, subject to the breath of every fool. What infinite heart's ease must kings neglect that private men enjoy? And what have kings that privates have not too, save ceremony? And what art thou, thou idle ceremony? What drink'st thou oft instead of homage, sweet but poisoned flattery? Oh, be sick, great greatness, and bid thy ceremony give thee cure. Canst thou, when thou command'st the beggar's knee, command the health of it?
You have music behind the soliloquy. Why did you use music to underscore it?
Well, Shakespeare was an amazing manipulator of people's emotions. I don't think, you know, we do it very crudely, nor do we do it as super subtly as Shakespeare did it. But I just wanted to change moods and change atmospheres and to, you know, if you say that soliloquy was about a certain kind of introspection and, oh my God, I'm so alone, nobody loves me, then there's a music to be found there with some of the stirring stuff and some of the emotional stuff. I wanted to make the, again, because it was poetry, if you could find the music to match the size of it, then what you can produce in the audience is an even bigger experience. So you come out moved, you've been laughing, you've been crying, you know, but it's somehow, it's a big experience, and the music was really needed to enhance that.
Tell me about how you prepare to do a soliloquy, like the one we've been talking about, where Henry V is alone, thinking about how, about the responsibilities that weigh on a king that other mortals don't have to deal with, and the loneliness of bearing that responsibility. You're going to try to make it sound as naturalistic and as graspable as possible,
yeah.
And you're going to look for the music and the poetry,
yeah,
and to not make it sound like this speech that's going on, but that it's really being felt,
yes,
as it's being said. So what's your process of reading it and rehearsing it and delivering it?
The great thing about playing it this time around was that I had played the part on stage before with the Royal Shakespeare Company, so it was kind of in my blood. So I was, mm-hmm, I had a kind of ongoing dialogue myself with the character. Then you just look at the actual specifics of the situation. He starts delivering that speech when he is alone at night, the last hour or two before the battle, so it's everybody else is asleep, so you're going to deliver it more quietly, you're going to speak it more quietly. And what I wanted to convey was the impression up to that point in the film of someone who just needed to say these things so much. He actually needed to say it out loud this long, and he needed to say it out loud because he didn't quite know what he thought, and so the soliloquy becomes something that is vital to say but held in and has a certain tension because he doesn't want anybody else to hear. But it's as if it's the trick, if you like, is to make it so necessary, and then that gives the speech energy. And as an audience, if it works well, you're thinking, yes, yes, that's it, go on, yeah, yeah, and then answer that question. And it becomes like a kind of puzzle that you have to solve.
We've been talking about some of the differences between stage and screen. Now, you've done Henry V both ways. Did you use a different kind of voice for your screen interpretation of Henry V than you did, say, in the soliloquy we've been talking about in the stage version?
Well, that's the one of the crucial differences, is that you just can use so much less voice, and I did. It's just a question of volume, really. I mean, if you have to, in a large theatre, if you, to try and convey a thinking man, a reflective man, it's just very hard if you have to, you know, fill the whole theatre. And that was what was so wonderful about doing it on film. You could just say things like the last line he has, which basically says, "Oh my God, it's all in front of me. It's all or nothing on this day." And he says, the day, what does he say? Oh, crap, I can't remember. Anyway, it's a short line. The day my friends and all things stay for me. And everything's waiting. It's like, am I going to live? Are we going to win? Is everybody going to hate me? And, you know, you just had to fill a theatre with that when you're in the theatre. On film, you can take it right down and just deliver it more slowly so that you can convey the sense of, oh, my God, that runs right through it.
Your Henry V has a very elaborate battle scene in it, in which the French and English battle in the French countryside, in the mud, on horseback. And there's volleys and volleys of arrows shot by the English at the French, and everybody shoots simultaneously. So there's hundreds of arrows that simultaneously go into the air, across the sky, into the French troops. This is your first movie. I think it was a pretty ambitious scene for a first film. What gave you the most trouble in putting that battle scene, in choreographing the battle scene?
Well, the worst trouble actually was because there was mud and there were hundreds and hundreds of people, was making sure we didn't kill the same people twice, and also making sure that the French didn't kill the French and the English things. We used to get mixed up. I mean, there were so many people, so chaos. It was like being in a battle. Shooting it was like being in a battle. So there were major logistical problems like that. And also, I wanted to put it together piece by piece and build it up, you know, and start from the initial scrum of everyone being involved and pressurized, then breaking it down a bit and seeing some individuals and then seeing it gets rainier and rainier and things. So you had to do it all out of sequence and bits and stuff. So, I mean, half the time, one just had to keep saying, so he's killed him and then he goes and kills him and then have the arrows hit there? So it was like a kind of jigsaw puzzle, putting it all together. But it was doing it in little bits as well, and keeping concentrated on smaller groups made it somehow manageable. Also, I wanted to make sure. Sometimes I've seen war films with great big wide shots of thousands of people in them, and people not acting very well. Lots of extras who don't move like soldiers do in battles. They're always worried. They're looking around them. Their bodies are tense and everything. And I wanted to get in close and look at real actors, really, you know, appearing to fight, and so that one could see the frenzy that kind of hand-to-hand combat produced.
What did you have to worry about safety-wise when you were shooting the volleys of arrows into the air?
Just where they landed, basically, and also the major worry, the producer's major worry with me was being on a horse. Being the director and star, they were in trouble if I fell over, and they not only lost their director, they lost their leading actor. So they were very careful to ensure me left, right and centre. And they told me I must never rear up on the horse. And of course, there are several opportunities to do that. I mean, I was very keen not to do that, but I discovered there was so much noise around, and the horse would rear, because it was a marvellously trained horse, it would rear at a particular noise, like the clicking of fingers. But there were so many noises like that that I found that every time I was supposed to cut and get somebody else to rear, there would a noise would be made, and I would rear anyway. And this horse, this trained film horse, a much more experienced in films than I was, I can tell you, would rear up and be a complete star. Every time they heard, every time the horses would, I'd be on that horse, and it would be, you know, loafing about its face, long in the face, and then the assistant director would go stand by, and the horse would suddenly the ears would pick up, and there's this kind of great, kind of the Elizabeth Taylor of the equine world would suddenly appear to upstage the king. I'll never work with it again.
You should hear what the horse is saying. are there any few lines in Henry V that speak to you especially, or that are especially beautiful musically to you?
I've cut it actually. There's a couple of lines that I cut in the St. Crispin's Day speech.
Oh no, really?
Where he talks about when he says, "By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I who doth feed upon my cost. But if it be a sin to covet honour, I am the most offending soul alive."
So why did you cut it?
Why did I cut? Because it's too long. Too long, simple as that. I just, that was one of those ones. I cut a lot of bits of me because that was just one of those things where the director is saying, I'm in love with that little bit, but actually it doesn't tell me anything that I'm not told somehow, somewhere else. And meantime, we've got to get on. Also, I had to cut lots of me because I was cutting bits of other people. You know, I couldn't. In
you
all
look honest, pretty bad otherwise.
Yeah, I couldn't. In all honesty, say I know. I'll keep that in. And I'll cut a bit of somebody else. I mean, it was interesting in the editing room. I remember thinking, God, what a powerful role the editor has. I could make all these people look terrible. I could use all the terrible takes, and I could use all my best takes. And I could be, but I mean, that would be too ridiculous for words. But my God, it's a powerful thing.
Oh, did you do rewriting?
There's no rewriting. There is a lot of cutting. I've cut a lot of things out that I basically felt were not understandable instantly enough. There are, you know, all that kind of Shakespearean stuff, like I'll fillick thee with a baldric and there's the nuisant. You think, I'm sorry, what does that mean? Can I have my manual to explain that, please, William? Or things, you know, that some of the more comic characters say that, you know, were probably funny for a week in 1599 and are now so toe-curlingly off that they've got to give the old elbow. So I was as brutal as I suspect old Bill would be. I think if he was alive and well now, he'd be working in Los Angeles and he'd be doing 90-minute movies, not four-hour plays.
One last thing, you know, there are so many people play Hamlet the Young Prince at this advanced age. You started playing Henry V when you were 23. Do you think there's anything to needing to be considerably older before you can really give a deep performance?
I think that it's different things. There was a certain rawness, a certain 23-ness about my performance then that I wouldn't get here at the grand old age of 28. You'd get the 28-ness performance. But there'll have been a tremendous adrenaline and rawness and something about that early one that made it unique. People say John Gielgud played Hamlet four times, and he played it first when he was, I think, you know, 25 or something, played it last when he was 44, and people said the last performance was sensational, but he said more than not, people said, yeah, but that first one you did, okay, there were a few this isn't that, but you were fantastic. Had this extraordinary thing. I think Henry V particularly benefits from a young performance. That's my story anyway, and I'm sticking to it.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.